I'd like to thank everyone for attending this very diverse session. Today I'm going to talk about some nitrogen management work that our group has done that's relevant for ecosystem policy development. The talk will introduce briefly the concept of ecosystem services. I'll be providing some data that compares different management practices and then returning to thinking about how we can use this information to move forward on adopting ecosystem services. So the paper by Daly et al. In 1997 really introduced to a general audience the dependence of human life on ecosystem structure and processes. And since then, for more than a decade, many different groups have been discussing the way to actually implement the very complex ideas and outcomes from ecosystem studies into equally complex and diverse social and economic realities. So there's been a lot of work done in this field, and we're, as you can see by the presence of people in this room, we're all still working towards implementing ecosystem services. So the Millennium Ecosystem Assessment provided a slightly different categorization of ecosystem processes than previous work, and mostly in the sense that they removed or categorized certain services as supporting services, which then are the foundation for the provisioning, regulating, and cultural services. And you can see right now agriculture really focuses on providing provisioning services, but of course our management practices significantly impact supporting, regulating, and cultural services. So within a given agricultural landscape, the physical environment, the biotic components, and management decisions all interact to define what are the magnitudes of ecosystem services that are possible from a given region. And of course, those differ greatly as we move from different systems to other systems. Our group is largely motivated by dealing with issues of nitrate leaching from agricultural lands, creating eutrophication and hypoxic zones. And this is a picture of the Gulf of Mexico, which is, of course, largely influenced by the very important grain regions in this country. And because agriculture contributes 60 to 70% of the human forcing of the global nitrogen cycle, our decisions, our management decisions, can of course drastically alter the types of ecosystem services we receive from the agricultural landscape. So we could broadly categorize nitrogen management into techniques that think about the way we use fertilizer, so timing and placement and type of fertilizer, and then into more ecological techniques for managing nitrogen, so thinking about crop rotation and organic sources. And our group has focused on these ecological techniques. So the data that I'll be presenting in this talk deal with farm-scale management decisions that a farmer has to make, such as cash crop, rotation, and nitrogen source. And in particular, we'll see data from studies that look at corn, soybean, and wheat as a cash crop, have either a winter bare fallow or a cover crop, and then a chemical nitrogen fertilizer source or legume nitrogen fixation. And what that looks like on a calendar year is that we are looking at three rotations: a conventional rotation that has a winter bare fallow and a summer grain, an alternative rotation that has a non-legume cover crop and still has the same fertilization practices for the summer grain. And in contrast, we look at systems that have a legume fertilization providing nitrogen for the corn growing season, followed by a non-legume cover crop, a soybean growing season, a wheat cash crop, which is harvested early enough for a legume to actually provide nitrogen for the next year's corn. So the first data that I'm going to show relates to nitrogen loss and eutrophication. And so we were comparing data sets using literature review and the technique of meta-analysis to compare a treatment in which there was a cover crop during the winter to a conventional system where there was a winter bare fallow. So on the x-axis, you see we have a percent change in nitrate leaching. So negative numbers mean a significant reduction in nitrate leaching using the practice. And so here we can see this black icon is just removing the winter bare fallow and using the same nitrogen practices for the cash grain. And the literature shows that overall, we have a 70% reduction in nitrate leaching in these fields. And here, these black bars show the actual data points. So there's a distribution of data, but quite strong evidence that a cover crop, simply a cover crop with the same nitrogen management application, can reduce nitrate leaching. If we look at a change of source, so if we use a legume source to fertilize the grain system, we're seeing an average of 40% reduction in leaching, but you can see there are many, many fewer studies in this category, so it'd be great to have more. So of course, we're interested in yield, so what does this do to yield outcomes for these systems? And again, we see a percent change in yield in fields that have the cover crop relative to the conventional bare fallow. And here, if we see the black icon shows that simply using a winter cover crop with the same nitrogen practices has no yield decline. So you can see the distribution of points. Some years there might be a slight decline, some years there's a slight benefit. If we are looking at changing nitrogen source, we see that this bar has a slightly different, slightly lower yield, about 10 to 12%, and here's the distribution of data. So we want to understand what's driving this yield decline. And if we separate out all of this data and categorize it by the ability of the legume to actually establish, we see that in cases where the legume was able to accumulate 110 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare before tillage, that these systems have no yield decline on average. And it's really the case when the legume does not do well that we have to worry about not having enough nitrogen for our crop to grow during the growing season. So how do these different practices compare across a broader range of techniques? So here we can see that on the x-axis we have different management techniques, on the y-axis percent reduction in nitrate leaching by using that technique. And you can see for fertilizer-based techniques, the range is from little effect to about 40% reduction in nitrate leaching, and these are all points from various literature review. And then if we look at ecological practices, we can see that rotations that have a cash grain and could be economically profitable to a farmer are on average from 40 to 70% reduction in nitrate leaching. So a lot of these ecological techniques are quite promising. So now I'd like to look at nitrogen gas loss and greenhouse gas emissions. And just a short background, so N2O loss is significant to be concerned about because N2O is 300 times more efficient as a greenhouse gas than relative to CO2. N2O also causes ozone depletion. The partitioning of nitrogen gas loss either into N2O, which is environmentally harmful, or N2 is dependent on the soil moisture conditions and carbon status of the soil. And finally, it is actually very difficult to measure N2O loss. So because it's difficult to measure, we often have the case where we're relying on models to inform our understanding of a system. And this is an example of five of the major agricultural models being run for a corn-soybean system in Illinois. And this is seasonal trends from running these different models. And this is denitrification, so N2 plus N2O, total nitrogen gas loss. And the reason I'm showing you this is because you can see that there are very different predictions from these models. Although the models actually converge and match up well with data for yield nitrate leaching and drainage. But when you look at the N gas, for which we have no data in the system, we see that the models are predicting very different things seasonally. So the SWAT model is very responsive to precipitation in the spring. EPIC also has more of a spring peak. The remaining models are definitely responding to the fertilization and planting event, but have very different magnitudes. So you can see that the models are not defining the same story. So what are other techniques we can use to understand the potential for N2O gas loss? So we looked at building an empirical model, so looking at a nitrogen N2O gas flux database. And again, looking at these same systems that we've been studying, a conventional system compared to a non-legume cover crop and then a legume fertilized system. And the first thing you notice, so we're showing cumulative N2O gas loss for a 6-year simulation. And you can see that the range predicted is actually really large. So essentially, the data for N2O flux is very variable. And we're looking across a range of studies for medium textured soils in this particular example. But what you can also see is that the legume systems are predicted to have significantly less loss over that period. So we can get some sense of relative effect of a management technique, but the absolute magnitude is a little bit difficult to quantify given our current abilities in terms of measurements and modeling. So finally, I'd like to talk a little bit about thinking about nitrogen management and energy efficiency. Nitrogen is a significant fossil fuel input into agricultural systems. In contrast, legume nitrogen is derived from solar energy from the preceding winter. And so if we could reduce farm energy use, it would be a very easily measurable tool to reduce the impact of agriculture in terms of greenhouse gases. And so looking at data from our literature review, we can see here on the x-axis is the amount of nitrogen and legume biomass prior to tillage, and this is the sort of desirable range of 100 to 200 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. And we can see it's divided by USDA climate zones, and zones 5 through 7 are the major grain climates in this country. And you can see that they're all very well represented in this zone of being able to attain that amount of nitrogen. And if we look at what that means in terms of energy provided by the legume, we can see that for zones 5 through 7, there's a lot of energy being provided by this nitrogen. So it's being substituted instead of using fertilizer. And this red dot is actually the energy equivalent in the average fertilizer application in Illinois. So that's a fairly high fertilization rate compared to many other grain systems that aren't as productive. And so what does this mean for actual whole farm energy budgets? So we can see this is, again, using average Illinois corn management practices, that nitrogen fertilizer is a significant energy input to a corn system, which the legume fertilized system does not require. There's slight differences in other inputs, but overall that winds up being a very significant input into the system. And if we look at the other types of energy that goes into managing the landscape, we can see that even if we include some extra land management for the cover crop, that overall a legume fertilized system is using about half of the energy relative to a conventional system. And this can be on the order of a 300 kilogram per hectare savings in terms of carbon dioxide emissions. So we do have significant evidence that management practices influence the types of ecosystem services we receiving from the agricultural landscape. If we can include cover crops in rotation, we could significantly reduce nitrate leaching, and there's strong evidence from this. I presented our literature review, but we've also worked on other methods. In terms of nitrogen gas flux, we have some indication of relative benefit of one system, one practice over another, but it's still very difficult to quantify absolute magnitude. And in terms of energy, if we could rely more on legume nitrogen sources, we could reduce our energy use. I think that in terms of moving forward, we'd like to, how can we really apply a holistic understanding of the agroecosystem landscape when we're moving towards ecosystem policy development? And right now, policies are rapidly developing to consider one aspect of one ecosystem services, in particular carbon sequestration. And I think it's important to be able to measure that the net ecosystem services benefit that we receive from agricultural policy is actually a net benefit. One of the big challenges that many people talk about is that often our defining a tradable unit that could be used in an ecosystem services market is very difficult. And you'll see that the types of data I showed, sometimes we just understand relative benefits of a certain practice. And so this is a constraint that we'll have to work to overcome. And finally, because ecosystem services that we're interested in promoting or ameliorating are often the public good services, government institutions will be involved in defining what are the units of trade, and that can sort of help us overcome this difficulty here. So thank you for your attention, and I'd like to acknowledge a lot of people who've worked on this project.